365 Fifth Avenue at 34th Street in Manhattan. Attend in person or online. The event is free. And for more information, go to www.gc.cuny.edu. That's Juan Gonzalez on Latinos, Race, and Empire. This Monday, December 12th at 6:30 p.m. See you there.
Welcome to City Watch on WBAI 99.5 FM and streaming live around the clock and around the world at WBAI.org. I'm your host, David Brand, deputy editor of the New York City news site City Limits. Later on, you can find a recap of today's show over at our website, citylimits.org. Now, each week, we here at City Watch bring you the newsmakers, newsbreakers, reformers, performers, the movers and shakers shaping New York City and informing us about our world, as always, with a focus on equity and justice. I want to take a moment to remember the journalist Grant Wall, who died Friday while covering the World Cup in Doha, Qatar. Wall was the first full-time soccer writer at a major publication in the United States. He worked for Sports Illustrated. And so he's had a tremendous influence on generations of readers and, frankly, on the sport here, and a big influence on me. He was fired in 2020 when he criticized the magazine's publisher for pay cuts during the pandemic, and he moved on to Substack. He wrote books, and he created a documentary that's now being advertised and playing on Prime about the soccer rivalry and cultural rivalries between the United States and Mexico. He also wrote about college basketball, and I remember he did a LeBron James cover story back when I was in high school, just 2 years younger than LeBron. And for some reason, that specific issue, the picture of LeBron on the cover and that profile, something that really stands out to me, something I'll always remember as an avid Sports Illustrated reader and, I guess, budding journalist back then. But, you know, I mentioned we always have a focus on equity and justice here, and so did Grant Wall. At the World Cup, in a country where LGBTQ rights are denied and where being gay is illegal, he wore a t-shirt with a rainbow flag over a soccer ball to honor his brother, and he was briefly detained. His last report, filed this past Thursday, was about the death of a construction worker who fell from a stadium in Qatar, the latest worker to die as a direct result of this tournament. And he talked about the government's callous response to that worker's death. So as a soccer fan and a journalist, Grant Wall has meant a lot to me. My first big writing project was during the 2014 World Cup. I visited a different bar, restaurant, cultural center in and around New York City that corresponded with one of the teams playing that day to really experience and capture the energy around these soccer games, not to play on the field necessarily, but kind of the community that soccer can inspire. He captured that. He exposed the inequities and the corruption at the heart of the game, made soccer more than just a sport. He's a tremendous writer, and so we remember him. But all right, we're coming up on the end of the year here, the end of 2022, and I want to hear from you. We're going to be discussing a few hot topics today, and so I want to put it out to our listeners in about 15, 20 minutes to give us a call, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. We have three guests on the program today, and they'll be talking about some pretty hot topics. That's taxes for the wealthiest New Yorkers, housing for the lowest income New Yorkers and everyone in between, driving, parking, and New York City's open streets. These are topics I know you all have something to say about. In fact, Jeff did a program a couple weeks ago all about open streets and had like so many callers that I think he had to cut it off at the end of the program, unfortunately. So if you were listening then, you want to get a word in now, feel free to give us a call later in the program. It's 212-209-2877. Our first guests joining us in just a minute are key to the new Invest in Our New York campaign. It's a coalition of elected officials and community advocates for working-class New Yorkers who are calling on the state to commit huge investments in public education and childcare, rent subsidies and affordable housing, public benefits and strategies for addressing climate change. How would New York raise that money to do it? Well, according to the Invest in Our New York campaign, by increasing taxes on the wealthiest 5% of New Yorkers and instituting taxes on unrealized capital gains, which things like unsold stocks and bonds, as well as cryptocurrency and other assets. Now, I think as we all know, the status quo is not working. Billionaires and corporations have made record profits during the pandemic. Meanwhile, the number of food stamp recipients and applicants in New York have increased. Tenants owe billions of dollars in back rent. New York City's homeless population has reached an all-time high. The Invest in Our New York campaign has organized to try to address some of these issues. It's a statewide coalition, and so joining us in a moment will be Assemblymember Dr. Anna Kellis, who represents the upstate cities of Ithaca and Cortland and the surrounding towns, and Carolyn Martinez-Class, the Invest in Our New York campaign coordinator who lives in Brooklyn. After that, we'll talk with Sarah Lind of the organization Open Plans, whose mission is to transform the streets of New York City to be truly livable for the residents of the city. That's their mission statement. That means fewer cars, less free street parking, more open streets, pedestrian and cyclist-friendly infrastructure. And while some of those proposals sound like no-brainers, they elicit some pretty strong reactions, especially from people who rely on cars. And I know you have an opinion, and we want to hear from you. So later in the program, I'm going to say this one more time, 212-209-2877. Let's get to our first guest. On the line, as I mentioned, we have Assemblymember Dr. Anna Kellis, who represents the 125th Assembly District, covering cities of Ithaca and Cortland. Kellis is a public health scientist by training and a lifelong advocate for environmental and human rights. Carolyn Martinez-Class is the Invest in Our New York campaign coordinator. They previously served as the organizing and policy coordinator at Communities United for Police Reform, where they coordinated passage of the Safer New York Act, a police reform package. Assemblymember Dr. Kellis, Carolyn Martinez-Class, welcome to City Watch.
Thank you for having us.
So I want to start with, Dr. Kellis, I want to start with you. Can you tell us about the campaign's focus and why you got involved, and what exactly are these taxes that you want to increase?
So I start with how I got involved or why I got involved. I think just this last year is exemplary of what was inspiring me before and continues to inspire me. If you look at the data on the impact of COVID, you'll see the working class has struggled tremendously financially, increase in homelessness, increase in financial strain, being housing burdened, increase food insecurity, you name it, down the line. And yet there's been over 20% increase in corporate profits. Just as one statistic example of why I think this is so important. This is about paying your fair share. This is about creating equity. We have seen over the years a loss, and this is I think a manipulation of the discussion. There's always the concern that we're going to lose people if we tax them. We can't do this. We're losing people in New York State. But if you look at who we are losing, the people we are losing are the working class. Mm-hmm. They are not the wealthy. And there was a study that came out recently that showed, as a result of COVID, and even the tax increases that we did 2 years ago, we did do a small temporary corporate tax increase and a small progressive income tax increase. And there was no change in those populations in New York State. Now, they did move around the state as a result of COVID, particularly because of the the ability to work remotely. But in total, across the state, we did not see a significant decrease in those populations. So that in and of itself tells us so much and is part of why I'm part of this campaign.
Well, Carolyn, why is the working class leaving? Because we do hear that all the time. If you raise taxes, then the wealthiest New Yorkers will leave. It didn't seem like that happened based on those 2021 increases and corporate increases. But why are working class New Yorkers and middle income New Yorkers leaving the state? And how does the campaign try to solve that?
Well, David, you know, we have seen the astronomical rise in rents, not just in New York City, where rents are 40% above what they were in March 2020, but also in places like Rochester and the lower Hudson Valley. Utility and food costs are up. There's a, you know, we're in a 30-year high inflation rate. And in this context, people are having to make choices between paying their rent, their groceries for drivers. You know, energy costs are up, gas costs are up. And so this is driving people out. We know that New York is growing increasingly more unaffordable, and the gap between the haves and have-nots has just increased astronomically during the pandemic, while people are struggling to make day-to-day decisions about how they allocate their paychecks. New York's wealthiest, those who earn $30 million or more, are holding trillions of dollars in wealth, most of which is untaxed. And so what we're seeing is that costs are rising, wages have remained stagnant. Living in the state is becoming more difficult for working class and middle class people and families. And meanwhile, corporate profits are, you know, a historic high. And so in that dynamic, you know, we took the time in the Invest in Our New York campaign to try and think of what are some short term ways in which we can address the immediate affordability crisis, and what are the long term areas that people need to see investment in. And so on the affordability end, you know, things like the Build Public Renewables Act will help mitigate some utility costs, housing assistance and rental assistance for tenants will help deal with some of the rent issues. And then in the longer term, making sure that we have a functioning public education system that we've made deep investments to, addressing the climate crisis and building, you know, out a green economy that is centered on well-paying jobs and it's community-oriented. Those are some of the ways. The other thing I'll mention in terms of the short term is really the push to increase the minimum wage in New York to be tied to cost of living increases. And so, you know, these are just some examples of ways in which we're trying to think through mitigating the moment that we're in the affordability crisis, and ensuring that New Yorkers are able to continue to live in the state and in New York City, and looking long term at where are the places that we need to make sure we're investing so that communities are able to thrive and so that they have access to programs that they need.
Assemblymember Kellis, I want to talk specifically about housing. So raising taxes on the wealthiest 5% of New Yorkers, raising taxes on unrealized capital gains, on corporate profits, you know, would ideally lead to reinvesting that money in housing programs and other social service programs. But specifically with housing, what are you proposing the state do?
Well, there are several really important pieces of legislation that are already out there that we've been advocating for and we will continue to advocate for. One of them is the Tenant Opportunity Protection Act, and that protects low-income tenants and gives them priority purchasing rights if and when a landlord puts their building up for sale. And this is not new. There is a great example in Washington, D.C., for example, and that was in 1980. And since, I think, between 2002 and 2013, over 1,400 low-income residents preserved affordable housing. So this is not rocket science. This is not new. This is not a hugely controversial on the political spectrum across the country with respect to what is viable. And I think that this is really important because it preserves affordable housing, and it also prevents that or reduces the tendency to flip housing. So buying affordable housing, tearing it down and building a high rise that's all luxury housing, for example, or buying housing, jacking up the rents, pushing out affordable and, the people who are there who are low and middle income. And it has been very successful where it has been used. And even in New York, where we do not have what we call TOPA, the Tenant Opportunity Protection Act, we have examples of these limited equity cooperatives being formed by tenants who have purchased their buildings. But case after case, there's tremendous struggle because we don't have the legislative infrastructure. And I think that we would have a lot more of this, which would, of course, retain so much more affordable housing. And then we also have a proposal that we've been supporting for years called the Housing Access Voucher Program. And this is similar to the infrastructure of the federal program, but it would be focused explicitly on people who are already experiencing homelessness and people who are at imminent risk of homelessness. Hugely important because, as you noted earlier, we have seen a continuous increase in homelessness and those at imminent risk of homelessness that has been severely exacerbated because of COVID. So, again, the model has been tried and true. It exists at the federal level, and this would have a very targeted focus. And then, of course, we simply need to build more housing. And my interest and the interest of the campaign, which drew me to the campaign, is the focus on social housing, reinvesting in social housing. We have been disinvesting in social housing for decades, and the consequences are real and obvious. And it is a very stable, proven way of creating housing access, affordable housing access that's permanent.
And that includes like NYCHA public housing here in New York City, Mitchell Llama, home ownership opportunities here in New York where you can't sell to speculators basically, and the qualifying for those are based on income.
Right, and I would note, what we're talking about is not creating a situation where landlords don't have a place at this table. This is, again, just like in the conversations with taxing the wealthy, this is about balance and equity so that it isn't an unlimited, an environment where it is about making as much profit as possible. This is about creating access to housing as a right. We know it creates stability in our economy. We know it creates a strong middle class, which is a definition of a strong economy. It stabilizes the working class. That's what this is about.
Well, Carolyn, I want to turn to you because someone member mentioned building more housing and building more social housing. The Invest in Our New York campaign recently came out in opposition to some of Hochul's stated goals for housing in the next legislative session when she talked on the radio recently about how local zoning laws restrict housing development. And the campaign put out a statement saying Governor Hochul has the power to be truly proactive in addressing housing by investing $10.4 billion in housing to increase access for New York's most vulnerable, to drive down the cost of rent and utilities. Until those investments are made, we will continue treating this plan as yet another unserious cash grab for the donor class. So could you talk about that a little more? Like, what are the problems with when she talks about lifting zoning regulations? And how do you think we're going to build new housing to meet the need?
Of course. I think part of what is complicated in this moment is that Governor Hochul's proposal is not far-reaching enough to meet the need of the moment that we are in. And so it's not just about rezoning, and it's not necessarily about, you know, building taller and more concentrated ways, mm-hmm. but it's really looking at what path do we have to actually approach housing equitably, approach housing not just with kind of development in the traditional sense in mind, and actually looking at what are the ways, whether it's through programs like TOPA, right, which provides tenants the opportunity to purchase, what are the ways in which the state can play an active and direct role that isn't centering making profits as the core aim of our housing system. And so the Invest in Our New York campaign is supporting the call for the, you know, $5 billion to go towards social housing, which Assembly Member Kellis mentioned, and the focus really being on not just building and the social housing proposal being focused on a state-run program where it's not just about building new housing, but it's about acquiring and renovating housing as well. And really looking towards state programs as being the drivers of this next moment in housing in New York and not private developers.
Yeah, I guess the criticism of a lot of the housing development and the rezonings that we see, and that, you know, it's kind of tacked on. A percentage of the building will be affordable, but not deeply affordable. And, you know, people call that kind of trickle down housing. Like, we're going to increase supply, and then hopefully that lowers rents overall and that units become more affordable, which might be the case, but that would take a very long time. So it sounds like some of your proposals are intended to make things affordable in the immediate term.
Yeah, what you were mentioning, I think, is actually really important because if you look at, so when we subsidize a building and 10% of it, or even in some cases 20% of them, are considered affordable, meaning 80% AMI or less, area median income, and the rest can be market rate or even luxury, then the amount of subsidy that we're paying to that developer to build that development is actually really high per unit, but we're only getting 20% or 10% in some cases. So essentially, we end up subsidizing market rate and luxury housing. And I think that that is really important to consider in the face of the lack of affordable housing that we're dealing with. We have a large development. The reason, you know, I'm so focused on this is that Ithaca, one of the cities in the state, in a city in my district, is the 11th most expensive city in the country, and one of the most expensive cities. Of course, I think it's the second most expensive city in the country and or in the state, and has a tremendous wealth inequity. We have rents that are, you know, over $5,000 a month in upstate New York, in Ithaca, New York. So it really does rival some of the difficulties that we're seeing in New York City as well. And we have a affordable housing project that is going up in the center of the city. The entire building will be under 80% area median income and go down to as low as 30% area median income. And if you talk about income diversity, 30% to 80% area median income is actually still very economically diverse. And also, when we use area median income as how we define affordability, that is the federal standard, it's totally, of course, dependent on the general wealth of the area that you're building. So in my area, area median income of 80%, which is technically affordable, is still way out of reach of many of the people who are low income, because the overall wealth is so high.
Assembly member, we're gonna have to leave it there. But thank you for joining the program today. It's Assembly Member Dr. Anna Kellis, who represents Ithaca and Cortland, upstate New York's 125th Assembly District, and Carolyn Martinez Class, the campaign coordinator for the Invest in Our New York campaign. Thank you both for joining City Watch.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to City Watch on WBAI 99.5 FM. streaming live at WBAI.org. I'm your host, David Brand. You can follow me on Twitter at David F. Brand. Again, at David F. Brand. You just heard from Assemblymember Dr. Anna Kellis, who represents Ithaca and Cortland upstate, and Carolyn Martinez Class, who's a campaign coordinator for the Invest in Our New York campaign that wants to increase taxes on the wealthiest New Yorkers and on corporations and on unrealized capital gains to invest that revenue into housing and social services and other environmental programs here in New York. Listeners, I want to hear from you. Mention it at the top of the show. Give us a call, 212-209-2877. Again, that's 212-209-2877. What are your priorities for the upcoming legislative session? Do you agree with raising taxes on the wealthiest New Yorkers? How do you think we could solve this problem of inequity in New York? Now, while we wait for callers, I just want to talk a bit about the station here because we need you. I attended a panel discussion about solutions to affordable housing the other day, and you know, sometimes I wonder why I go to these things to hear politicians and advocates hit their talking points, the same things they'll tell me over the phone in my reporting or in meetings when maybe they'll even talk with more candor in those private settings. So I'm sitting in the back of the room listening to people talk, feeling like kids in Peanuts with teacher at the front of the class going, womp, 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 womp. Put the World Cup match on my computer, was taking notes, finishing up another story. Then when the panel was wrapping up, a woman stood up to demand answers about why the city and state housing agencies are ignoring problems at Mitchell Llama housing developments like hers. So she stood up in a large room in front of a number of powerful people and demanded to know why conditions were getting worse and worse and why the state homes and community renewal division wasn't doing anything about it. So she was shot down. No one on the dais answered her questions. But after it wrapped up, I went over to her and started talking. It sounded like a really important story. I wanted to learn more. Well, it turns out the woman, Phyllis, is a WBAI listener, and she was familiar with our program. So Phyllis, if you're out there listening today, thanks for talking with me. And thanks for standing up in that room and raising these concerns, because I want to acknowledge the courage it takes to stand up in a situation like that and demand answers and respect from elected officials, from powerful lobbyists, from journalists, frankly. And so it really made sense to me that she is a WBAI listener, because WBAI really focuses on those voices and amplifies those voices. And, you know, it was inspiring to see her do that. That's the listenership we have. That's our audience. And, you know, we rely on you because you are really the beating heart of New York City. And we rely on you not just as listeners, not just as contributors, but as funders, because we can't do this without you. We literally cannot. We owe a lot of money on rent. We owe a lot of money for our antenna over in Manhattan. And so we need you to chip in and help us keep it going by going to give2wbai.org, calling 212-209-2950, and making a pledge. That's 212-209-2950. Visit give2wbai.org. We need you for our tower fund here. We want to keep this going. We want to amplify voices of people like Phyllis out there. And we have a caller on the line right now who we're going to get to in just a minute. But I just want to finish this pitch here because it's important. WBAI depends on you. You know, the WBAI audience remains strong. You guys are lifers. You know, you stuck with this station for decades. You've been listening to a lot of different programs. A lot of programs that have stayed the same for a long time. We had, just before coming on, The Morning Ursay with Jim Ursay. I love that show. I love the music. I love Jim's demeanor. I love following the program, listening to it as I'm kind of getting psyched up to do my show. Kind of just gives me a little bit of calm and a little bit of like a calming energy, a positive energy. And I hope that you have that experience too. And let's keep it going. Go to give2wbai.org, give2wbai.org, or call 212-209-2950 and make a pledge. That's 212-209-2950. Now, I mentioned audience. I mentioned how much we value our callers, our listeners. We have a caller on the line right now. Catherine, can you put that caller through? Hi, caller. Where are you located, and what's on your mind?
Is this me?
Yes. What's your name?
Andrea Bobzo, and I live in southern Brooklyn, in the Brighton Beach, Coney Island, New York Aquarium area.
Oh, nice.
And I'm calling, our area is, seems to be turning Republican lately. But I want to tell you about the hurricane that affected the area. I was flooding the total area, and we have a little park called Esther Levy Park or Seaside Park. All the trees, all the bushes, all the vegetation from the whole area, which is a large area, really, many, many blocks, they were all destroyed due to the hurricane. Now, this was 10 years ago, Hurricane Sandy, I'm talking about.
Oh, wow.
About.
Yeah.
The city, yeah, the city hasn't planted anything back since.
Hmm.
So in the summer, you cannot really go to the street because you have all these high-rise buildings and no relief from the strong sun. And, you know, at this part, the sun is very strong in the summer. And I'm very upset. I live in a co-op. It's called mm-hmm. Trump Village. We couldn't change the name, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. remember that.
And so we formed a landscaping committee, and we purchased some trees for our, these are like co-op buildings that were in the past Mitchell Armour housing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so... we went to Long Island Tree Farms, you know, far out in Suffolk County, and trees, and had them shipped, and we hired local people to plant them. And those trees are, you know, really doing very well. And it wasn't costing a lot of money, but for some reason, the city doesn't have enough money to spend anything, you know, to improve the quality of life in our area, which is really mm-hmm. terrible. And this actually, they got, during Heim Deutsch was a councilman at one time,
mm-hmm.
Before he had to step down, and he got some $5 million or so to spend on the park, but they didn't spend it to, you know, to replant the green things, the trees and the bushes, but they spent the money, I don't even know how and why so much, just for rehabilitate, you know, the little playground that was actually working fine. So that's a complaint, and I don't know who to turn to.
Well, why don't – can I give you my email address, and then you could reach out to me, and we could talk more about that off air, because I would
Absolutely.
Love to find out a little. So I'm at david@citylimits.org, david@citylimits.org. And that goes to all our listeners out there. If there's something that is on your mind, mm-hmm. especially as it relates to housing, send me a message. It's david@citylimits.org.
The city limit is one word, right?
Yep, one word. That's the
– Capital C?
Yeah, either way, capital or lowercase, but that's my day job as a deputy editor over there.
Yeah.
So I thank you for calling.
That
would be great. Yeah, we're gonna leave it there and get to our next our next guest here. But really, thank you for that call, and you know that goes to what I was talking about. People who listen to WBAI are really motivated to make their communities a better place. And I thank you for calling in and sharing that experience. And you know, I've been thinking a lot more about Mitchell Llama housing in particular lately, and that's, I think we're seeing a lot of problems throughout the city in our Mitchell Llama housing stock. So look forward to connecting off air. But I want to get to our next guest here, and I think that call was a really important segue because Sarah Lind is Chief Strategy Officer of Open Plans, an organization that helps shape and influence policy around making New York City a more livable city, more efficient transit, pro-pedestrian design, open spaces. In her role, Sarah is developing and implementing a legislative and policy agenda, including an Office of Public Space Management. That's block-level democracy through a pilot program with New York City's borough presidents, streamlining the public space permitting process, and generally making our streets and city better and more livable. Sarah Lind is on the line now. Welcome to City Watch.
Hi, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Sarah, I thought that was a good segue from our last caller who talked about 10 years after Hurricane Sandy wiped out the greenery, wiped out the trees in her area down there in southern Brooklyn, still isn't there. How could someone like her go about raising awareness and getting the city to actually make things better over there, to plant the trees back?
Yeah, I thought it was a really illustrative comment because she talked about how the city didn't do it, and so she and her neighbors had to go out and, you know, buy the trees themselves, plant them themselves, and it sounds like they're managing them themselves. And this is a problem we see around the city, that the city's not doing this work of creating and maintaining beautiful and joyful public spaces, and instead residents have to do it themselves, which sometimes works out and oftentimes doesn't. And you have neighborhoods where people don't have the resources, they don't have the time, they can't do that themselves. And so, you know, we see some neighborhoods in the city that have bids and wealthy residents and they have beautiful public spaces. And then we see others where they just kind of have nothing. And it's a real problem because it's not just, you know, aesthetics. Like, as she was mentioning, there's a lot of reasons to have tree cover, especially as we enter, you know, or the continuing climate crisis. Having tree cover, having it absorb heat is really important. As we see increased flooding, having things like bioswales and parks to absorb rainwater. So there are real impacts to having this public space, and the fact that the city's not kind of doing it citywide is a real equity issue.
Well, you know, just going back to her comment, it's funny because one of the things I wanted to ask you toward the end of our interview, but I want to move it up here because I think it kind of relates, is, you know, how does an individual try to affect this kind of change on their block? And you have this plan for kind of block by block democracy, and just an experience that I had living in Ridgewood for many years and always walking with my son to the park a few blocks away. But the intersection to get to right across from the park is so dangerous. Cars are double parked because there's soccer games going on. There's buses coming, bus lane blocked. There's no stop sign in either direction. People are trying to navigate around these double parked cars. And meanwhile, kids are trying to cross into the park. It's right across from a school. It's all you need right there is a stoplight or a stop sign. But getting that accomplished is such a challenge. And to our caller, our caller's point, a similar experience down there in Brooklyn. So tell us about that block by block democracy program, and how does someone actually go about seeking and affecting this kind of like on the ground change?
Yeah, so the Building Blocks program, we're super excited to be working with Borough President Levine on a pilot program here in Manhattan, but we're hoping to, you know, scale it more citywide. The idea is, like you said, people know their block, they know the problems there, they know what they'd like to see, and, you know, the city, I guess, in some ways can't know every single block. So it's giving residents a chance to get together. We do some facilitated discussions with planners and others who, you know, are familiar with the options available, and then work with them to come to some consensus about what they'd like on the block, and then help them advocate to DOT and other city agencies to get those things done. This could be things like, you know, maybe they want it to be an open street every Saturday. Maybe they just want it to be easier to throw a block party. Maybe they want something more permanent, like chicanes to slow down cars so they're not speeding past their street. You know, maybe they do want, like, more tree cover, a bike rack, public seating, all of these things that are available but hard to get. So that's our program, and I think it's really exciting. But to your point, there are places all over the city that we're not going to get to. So I think it's also important for people to understand kind of how to do that advocacy themselves. You know, showing up at your community board, talking to your community board district manager, calling your council member's office. They hear a lot of complaints about a lot of things, but if they're not hearing from you, they might not understand what all the issues are. So call your council member. You know, you can put in 311 complaints. You can, there are programs with DOT. You can request some of these things yourself. But like I said, it is in some ways very disheartening that each resident has to be an advocate when not everyone has the time and resources to do that. So that's why another one of our proposals is this Office of Public Space Management, kind of just calling on the city to do a better job of that block by block management of public space rather than leaving it all to residents.
So what would that look like, the Office of Public Space Management? That would be an office overseen by the mayor?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few different possibilities, but ideally it would be a mayoral office with both kind of a broad planning umbrella to plan out our public space in our city, and then also, like I said, kind of that on-the-ground management that we see right now done mostly by bids that, you know, hire people to do this, like, on the ground. Like, what are the problems here on this block? Is this working or not? Do we need more trash cans? You know, all, like, really nitty-gritty details that, like I said, the city's not doing now. So it's also a jobs program, you know, hiring people to do this work that has real career, you know, trajectory and potential rather than just, you know, cleaning the street every weekend. But, you know, we see this as a real jobs and career program as well.
You had mentioned open streets earlier.
Yeah.
That's another hot topic. It's beloved by many New Yorkers and, frankly, I think hated by others. My colleague yep. Jeff had a whole show on open streets a few months ago, and I had mentioned at the top of the program that he got like so many callers, and I think we might get some callers too from this. But yeah, just people kind of airing their opinions and in some cases their grievances. But I wonder if you could talk about the state of open streets. That was a big initiative earlier in the pandemic.
Yeah.
There are still a few open streets left, including one in Jackson Heights. That's where Jeff lives, actually. So I was hoping you'd talk to us about, you know, what's going on with the ones that exist, and are those going to be permanent? And how do you respond to some of the critics of the open streets program?
Yeah, well, you know, something we all love about New Yorkers is there are many opinions and that we're not afraid to share. So love that. Never change. Yeah, so the program is permanent and it varies. You know, during the pandemic, there was a huge explosion of open streets. We really needed it. People needed space to get out of their apartments. A lot of those are now defunct. And we're seeing that for a successful open street, you know, it really does need that management. It needs people who can you know, move the barricades, maintain any programming, you know, keep the street clean, et cetera. We're also seeing, I think you mentioned the one in Jackson Heights, that some of the best ones have more permanent features so that people really feel, oh, this is a place for people all the time, rather than some of them where it's like on a Saturday morning they put out barricades, but there's still cars parked on each side and still just sort of feels like a street. So making it a more permanent place where people feel that they are welcome and that cars are really the guests, I think, is the way that it's successful. I would also say that DOT recently released a report on the Open Streets program showing that in places where there were open streets, businesses are doing much better than similar businesses in the neighborhood around them that are not on the open street. So In addition to kind of the livability and the public space aspect of it, there's a real economic argument too. You know, when people feel like they can walk around a neighborhood, spend time on their street, they also pop into the businesses and spend their money there. So lots of benefits of open streets.
You know, continuing to discuss cars and maybe our car-oriented society here in New York City, there's a rule in New York City that new housing development has to come with a minimum amount of parking spaces. And there's a report recently released by the Regional Planning Association called Parking Policy is Housing Policy. It finds that eliminating parking requirements actually leads to more affordable housing development.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess when you have to set aside space for parking, it means you're spending on parking garages or carving out space for a lot, and more money spent on the project with less space for actual housing, the costs passed on to the tenants or buyers. Can you talk about how you're working on that issue, and, you know, what would it look like in New York City if there weren't these parking minimums for new housing development?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a very active campaign to eliminate parking mandates in New York City. And just to give a little bit of the history, this is, you know, a really outdated relic from the Moses era. The original 1961 zoning code put this in, and it was designed at a time where, you know, we thought the car was freedom and that was the future. And now we see that cars often are the opposite of freedom. You are stuck in traffic. You know, you're just like locked in your car. You're not experiencing the city. And we know that, you know, dense walkable cities are better for the climate. They're better for community experiencing the city on the ground level rather than being stuck in a car. So we think that it's absolutely a relic of the past that needs to go. And like you said, it's absolutely housing policy. We see So also a little bit of background, cities all over the country have already eliminated parking mandates. Cities, you know, San Francisco, Minneapolis, Boston, Hartford, Connecticut, Buffalo. And we see studies show that rents, you know, go down when you eliminate parking mandates. So it's absolutely housing policy. And to your point, like developers, especially in New York City, it's so expensive. Every square foot you're building, it's expensive to build. And when you have to dedicate a lot of that space to parking, that's housing you're not building, and it's costs that you're passing on to the renters. And we know that low-income renters are less likely to own cars, so they're subsidizing the cost of parking for wealthier New Yorkers. So there's so many issues with the policy, and there's a real opportunity right now to eliminate parking mandates because the mayor has proposed a zoning text amendment, a change to the zoning code, with the potential to do this. And, you know, we're excited about the possibility, and we are advocating and pushing the mayor to go as big and bold as possible with this reform.
Yeah, I don't think people realize just the parking minimum requirements, and it's not something before I covered housing I really ever thought about. But I guess, like, what would a development look like, or what would a new apartment complex look like without these parking mandates?
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, it could just be that there's more housing. There's also, to your point, sometimes in a less dense area, they put the parking on a surface lot next to the housing. So, you know, this pushes apart the neighborhood. You have to walk past a big parking lot to get where you're going. And also, you know, it's just a big parking lot full of cars. It could be a park, other public space. It could also just be more housing, which we desperately need in this city. Also, sometimes developers will put the parking at ground level, not in a surface parking lot, but the first, you know, floor or two of the building. And that kind of creates dead neighborhoods as well. Instead of stores or, you know, restaurants there on the ground level, you just have a parking garage. So, you know, we'd have more housing, cheaper housing, more walkable, livable, vibrant communities. I think wins all around, right?
Well, Sarah Lynn from Open Plans, we're going to have to leave it there. But I thank you for coming on the program to talk with us. And yeah, we're going to have to talk more.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me. It was great.
You're listening to City Watch on WBAI 99.5 FM and streaming live at WBAI.org. You know, a couple of hot topics that we've talked about today, whether that's taxes on the wealthy, affordable housing development, the Open Streets program, parking. If you want to give us a call, we have about 5 or 6 more minutes in the program. You can give us a call, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. 209-2877. Probably have time for one more call or two. But listen, while we wait for a caller, I want to make that pitch again for WBAI, for our Tower Fund, to keep us on the air, to keep bringing unique perspectives from journalists, from elected officials, from advocates, and from everyday New Yorkers, like our caller earlier from Southern Brooklyn, who talked about Sandy wiping out the trees 10 years ago. And then she and her neighbors going and purchasing trees from, I guess, a nursery on Long Island and planting them and maintaining them and kind of doing the amazing work that, you know, you would hope New York City would do. But that's kind of an example of the activism, the community-mindedness of our listeners. And we depend on you, not just as listeners, but also as contributors. So please consider making that extra step and becoming a BAI buddy, or just a one-time contributor. BAI buddy is what we call people who sustaining members who, you know, you just give us your credit card number and every month deduct a few bucks, help keep us on the air, help us cover rent, help us cover the cost of our really expensive antenna over there in Manhattan, or the rent on our studio here in Brooklyn. You can do that by going to give to WBAI.org. That's give, the number 2, WBAI.org, or calling 212-209-2950 and making a pledge. 212-209-2950. Making a pledge. Help keep us on the air. Help us pay for that expensive antenna, that tower over there in Manhattan. The rent on our studio. Staff salary. You know, producers, we do this for free. We do this because we love New York City. We love the area. We love the station. We love the diverse voices that we get to talk with out in the community when we talk about WBAI or just on the air. And that's really my favorite thing about being part of this station is I've been hosting this show with Jeff, like a co-host, since January of 2020, and pre-pandemic, it's been almost 3 years. It's amazing. And I think about the past 3 years of my life and all the people that I've met and all the different places I've gone for reporting or just, you know, being out in the city. And if I tell someone when I'm interviewing them that I have a role hosting a program on WBAI, just the recognition, the excitement from WBAI listeners. And I mentioned earlier when I was encouraging people to make that contribution, again, calling 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, that I was at this affordable housing panel discussion earlier this week. And it's elected officials, it's state senator, council member, it's a landlord lobbyist, a tenants' rights advocate, you know, people who are used to moving in kind of like higher levels and talking with the governor, the mayor, you know, the wealthy New Yorkers. But then here we have a woman who stands up in that crowd, her name's Phyllis, confronted some of the elected officials, confronted the people hosting the panel and said, I want my question answered. I live in Mitchell Llama houses in the Bronx. Conditions are deteriorating. State has not done anything about it. I want answers. You know, doing that takes so much courage, and it's inspiring for someone to stand up in a crowd like that. Phyllis, if you're out there listening today, said this earlier, but I thought that was so cool, and just reflects the kind of people who listen to this station, who want answers, who want to hold elected officials accountable, who want better living conditions for themselves and for their neighbors. And it's inspiring. It's inspiring to be a part of the station because of that. And we hope that you feel that way too, and that you can help us keep this going by going to give to WBAI.org. That's give the number 2, WBAI.org. Or just go to our website, WBAI.org, and you'll find on the homepage there places where you can click to make a contribution. 212-209-2950 is the number you can call to do it if you don't want to go online. 212-209-2950. Do it because you love the city, you love our area, love WBAI's history, want to have your unique voice heard, you love shows like Morning Ursay, like City Watch, like our diverse music that we offer here, like Con Sabor Latino, which, you know, when I first started at BAI, our show was on at 6 p.m. on Sundays, and we would come after Con Sabor Latino, and that was always cool to listen to their music. You know, it's been awesome. Coming up in the end of the year here, that means it's also the end of the of tax period of the 2020 tax year. So if you want to, you know, get a few more nonprofit donations in, you know, get that write that off in your taxes, what better way to do it than WBAI? One last time, that's give number 2 WBAI.org, give to WBAI.org, or call 212-209-2950. That's my pitch. Last pitch of 2022, because I won't be back on the program until New Year's Day, January 1st, 2023. Jeff and I are going to be back together talking about housing, homelessness, and other issues affecting New York City and New York State, something we've focused on a lot here on the program, something I focused on in my reporting at City Limits. It's been an awesome 2022. Really thankful to share it with everyone who's been listening. And again, one last time, if you want to make that contribution, we would really appreciate that. Keep us on the air. Give to WBAI.org. Again, listen, you've been listening to City Watch on WBAI 99.5 FM, streaming live at WBAI.org. I'm your host, David Brand. Coming up on the end here, I want to thank all of our guests, Assemblymember Anna Kellis and Invest in Our New York campaign coordinator, Carolyn Martinez Class, also Sarah Lynn from Open Plans, and our caller. I didn't quite catch your name, unfortunately, when you said it earlier, so I'm looking forward to that email that you send me so we can talk a little more off air. But really, thank you for calling and sharing the experience that you've had over there in Southern Brooklyn. I think we had a couple other callers who weren't able to get through as we moved to the second guest. I'm sorry for that, but we'll get to you next time. And you can also email me, david@citylimits.org. I also want to thank our engineer, Catherine Davis, for making it all happen. again, been listening to City Watch. Have a great rest of your day, and thanks for tuning in.
Holidays bring us all together. So let's stay up to date with COVID-19 vaccines and boosters. And mask up if it's crowded indoors. Happy, healthy holidays.
I'm Celeste Katz Marston.
And I'm Jeff Simmons.
We host Driving Forces here on WBAI.
We bring you thoughtful conversations about what really matters to New Yorkers on politics and public policy.
And we make time to hear from you, our listeners, not just during the holidays, but all year round.
To keep these critical conversations on the air, we need your help.
From now until New Year's, we're building up our funds to pay rent on our broadcast tower at Four Times Square.
Go to towerfund.wbai.org today to help us keep free speech radio alive in the greatest city in the world. That's towerfund.wbai.org. WBAI is getting its financial house in order. Help us keep our signal as strong and as clear as our commitment to bringing you the best in news, music, and culture.
Give to WBAI this holiday season. Be heard.
This is Julian Assange. You're listening to WBAI New York. Stay strong and keep listening.
I said I like it like that.
I said I like it like that.
I said I like it like that.
On Monday, December 12th at 6:30 p.m., Juan Gonzalez gives a talk, Latinos, Race, and Empire, at the CUNY Graduate Center at 365 Fifth Avenue at 34th Street in Manhattan. As he prepares to move to Chicago, Juan Gonzalez shares what he's learned about democratic rights, racism, police abuse, and imperial control during more than 50 years as radical activist, acclaimed journalist, and historian of the Latinx experience. This farewell talk by Gonzalez, co-host of Democracy Now! And former New York Daily News columnist, extracts lessons from his time in the Young Lords, the Puerto Rican counterpart of the Black Panther Party, and beyond. Latinos, Race, and Empire, a talk by Juan Gonzalez at the CUNY Graduate Center, 365 Fifth Avenue at 34th Street in Manhattan. Attend in person or online. The event is free. And for more information, go to www.gc.cuny.edu. That's Juan Gonzalez on Latinos, Race, and Empire, this Monday, December 12th at 6:30 p.m. See you there.
Prison, a U.S. political prisoner. It's up to the people to get Mumia out. The more you learn about our brother and revolutionary elder Mumia Abu-Jamal, the easier it will be to help get him out. Explosive new evidence has come to light that a key witness may have been bribed to testify against Mumia at his 1982 trial. Judge Lucretia Clemens appears to be more concerned about her class privilege than seeking out the truth by denying Mumia's appeal for a new trial. The Free Mumia Coalition will stand with Mumia on Friday, December 16th, 9 a.m. in Philadelphia at the Court of Common Pleas. If you would like to join us on our charter bus to Philadelphia to demand a new trial for Mumia, go to bringmumiahome.com. That's bringmumiahome.com to reserve a seat or call 212-330-8029. That's 212-330-8029 for further details.
And this is WBAI in New York. Stay tuned. Coming up right now, Radio Free Aaron And stay tuned. Following that will be Voices of Resistance.
Good luck.